I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. Washington, this is Democracy Now!
As my sister, I'll take her to her grave and fulfill my duties towards her. But her professional rights are with her ministry and with institutions. There's no charter, no law in the world, none of them, that allows targeting a journalist.
Thousands gathered in Lebanon on Thursday for the funeral of the prominent Lebanese journalist Amal Khalil. Lebanon's prime minister has accused Israeli forces of committing a war crime by first targeting her in an airstrike, then blocking medical crews from reaching her for hours. We'll speak to the Committee to Protect Journalists and go to Beirut to speak with another reporter who knew Amal and was himself injured in an Israeli strike just last month. Then New York City Council member Chiosse joins us. He was violently arrested earlier this week at a protest against deed theft, a practice that's led to many evictions of longtime homeowners. Finally, Muskism, a guide for the perplexed. Professor Quinn Slobodian looks at the ideology of Elon Musk.
Muskism is the promise of sovereignty through technology that ends up cashing out as a deeper and deeper dependency of both states and people on the suite of products and services that Musk himself offers.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump says a ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon will be extended by 3 weeks, even as Israel continues to carry out attacks as its forces occupy southern Lebanon. On Thursday, Trump hosted Israel's and Lebanon's ambassadors to the Oval Office for a second round of U.S.-facilitated talks. Once again, Hezbollah was not a part of the negotiations. As the talks took place, Hezbollah fighters fired rockets, drones, and artillery at Israeli positions as Israeli warplanes and artillery struck multiple towns in southern Lebanon. Meanwhile, thousands gathered for the funeral Thursday of Amal Khalil, a correspondent for the daily newspaper Al-Akhbar, who was killed in a series of Israeli strikes in southern Lebanon Wednesday that appeared to target her and her colleague, photographer Zeneb Farah. Khalil was the ninth journalist killed by Israeli strikes in Lebanon this year. We'll have more on her story after headlines. In Iran, CNN reports the U.S. military is developing new strike options around the Strait of Hormuz in the event that the current ceasefire breaks down. That includes plans to bomb civilian energy and infrastructure sites to pressure Tehran to return to negotiations. On Thursday, Trump said he's under no pressure to end the war he began with Iran, writing on social media, quote, "I have all the time in the world, but Iran doesn't. The clock is ticking," Trump wrote. He was also asked if he would consider using a nuclear weapon.
Why would a stupid question like that be asked? Why would I use a nuclear weapon when we've totally, in a very conventional way, decimated them without it? No, I wouldn't use it. A nuclear weapon should never be allowed to be used by anybody.
Israel's continuing deadly attacks across the Gaza Strip, despite the U.S. brokered so-called ceasefire that was supposed to have taken effect in October. On Wednesday evening, an Israeli airstrike targeted civilians in northern Gaza, killing at least 5 Palestinians, including 3 children. And on Thursday, an Israeli strike on a civilian car in El Maghassi refugee camp killed 3 people, including 2 civil defense workers. Witnesses said the victims were torn to pieces.
There were no heads, no legs, and no arms. We collected the remains from the streets, flesh, bones, brains, off the streets. And no one should fool us by saying there's a ceasefire. There's no information about any ceasefire.
Hamas said in response that Israeli strikes in Gaza constitute a criminal escalation, unquote, that undermines commitments to the ceasefire. Meanwhile, in the occupied West Bank, Israeli soldiers shot and killed a child during an army raid on the city of Nablus. The boy, Yusuf Sameh Ashteya, was just 15 years old. Senate Republicans have voted to advance a budget blueprint that would increase funding to ICE and Border Patrol by an additional $70 billion for the rest of Trump's term. The vote came early Thursday after an all-night marathon session known as a Votorama. It bypasses a Democratic filibuster by using the Senate's reconciliation process. The budget measure now heads to the House of Representatives, where Republican leaders are seeking to pass it without change. Democrats have refused to fund ICE and Border Patrol, leading to a partial government shutdown since mid-February. They're demanding limits on immigration enforcement, including barring raids at schools and hospitals, a ban on federal agents' use of federal facial coverings, body cameras, and requiring judicial warrants to enter private property. The Justice Department is moving forward with Trump's request to revoke the U.S. citizenship of hundreds of people who were born in foreign countries. DOJ officials are targeting nearly 400 U.S. citizens, calling it the highest volume of denaturalization referrals in history, unquote. These cases are extremely unusual, and denaturalization has so far only been pursued when a person is accused of obtaining U.S. citizenship through fraud or convicted of certain crimes. The naturalization process is extremely rigorous, and applicants are subjected to arduous vetting before even being approved. The New York Times reports the Trump administration's considering a plan to deport hundreds of Afghan refugees who assisted U.S. forces during the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan, sending them to the Democratic Republic of Congo, or a third country they have no ties to. More than 1,000 Afghan refugees, many of whom served as U.S. interpreters, have been stranded in Qatar for over a year since Trump officials halted their resettlement to the U.S. after they were evacuated from Afghanistan. The group includes over 400 children and family of U.S. service members. The U.S.-based aid group Afghan Evac said refugees now have to choose between possibly being deported to a third country or be returned to Afghanistan under Taliban rule, where they could be killed. Advocates are demanding the release of an Iranian PhD student who was detained earlier this month and has been transferred to multiple ICE jails. Yusuf Azizi was taken outside of his home after return from dropping off his 11-year-old daughter at school and 3-year-old son at daycare. Both of his children are U.S. citizens. He and his wife have lived in the U.S. for over a decade. Azizi has reportedly been detained across ICE jails in Louisiana, Texas, and now Arizona. Advocates say they believe he's being targeted over media appearances in which he provided commentary on U.S.-Iran relations. In related news, Drop Site News has confirmed two Iranian women detained by ICE are not related to the late Iranian military commander Qasem Soleimani, like Trump officials claimed. Hamida Soleimani Asfar and her daughter, Serena Hosseini, were arrested earlier this month at their home in Los Angeles. At the time, Secretary of State Marco Rubio claimed that two women were relatives of Soleimani. But a review of Iranian birth records and other personal documents by DropSite found no connection to Soleimani or his extended family. The Trump administration is refusing to release them. In Michigan, hundreds of immigrants detained at the ICE North Lake facility in Baldwin launched a hunger and labor strike earlier this week, denouncing medical neglect, prolonged confinement, and other dangerous and inhumane conditions. The action was reported by the advocacy group No Detention Centers in Michigan, which said an estimated 200 immigrants had joined by Tuesday. Since Trump returned to office, there's been at least one reported death at the for-profit facility, which is operated by the private prison company Geo Group, as well as multiple suicide attempts. The Philadelphia City Council has approved a series of measures that would limit ICE operations. The ICE Out legislation ends local collaboration with ICE in raids and arrests, shields private personal data from being shared with federal immigration agents, bans ICE agents from entering hospitals, libraries, and other city facilities, among other prohibitions. The ICE Out bill was introduced by Philadelphia Council members Kendra Brooks and Rue Landau. Councilmember Brooks spoke as the room erupted in cheers.
This legislation shows that Philadelphians are not afraid to stand up to the Trump administration. We are not afraid to stand up to our neighbors, and we do not take kindly to bullies who try to intimidate people in our communities.
To see our interview with Philadelphia City Council member Kendra Brooks, go to democracynow.org. A court in Kuwait has acquitted U.S. Kuwaiti journalist Ahmed Shahab Eldin on charges of spreading false information and harming national security after he posted about the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran on social media. Shahab Eldin is expected to walk free from a Kuwaiti prison today, capping 52 days behind bars. He was arrested March 2nd after he shared photos and videos of a U.S. fighter jet that crashed in Kuwait on his Substack page, content that was not exclusive to him and had appeared on other platforms. The Committee to Protect Journalists condemned Shahab Eldin's arrest as part of a much wider crackdown on online journalism and free expression in Gulf nations. A U.S. Army Special Operations soldier involved in the capture of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has been arrested and charged with illegally betting on his ouster on the polymarket prediction market. The Justice Department says Master Sergeant Gannon Ken Van Dyke earned more than $400,000 on the trades. He faces charges including unlawful use of confidential government information for personal gain, the theft of non-public government information, and commodities and wire fraud. At the White House Thursday, a reporter asked President Trump about the indictment. Trump responded, "I'll look into it."
The whole world, unfortunately, has become somewhat of a casino. And you look at what's going on all over the world, in Europe and every place they're doing these betting things. I was never much in favor of it. I don't like it conceptually, but it is what it is.
President Trump is a longtime casino magnate whose business has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection four times between 1991 and 2009. His son, Donald Trump Jr., is an advisor to the two leading prediction markets, Polymarket and Kalshi. President Trump's son, Eric Trump, is touting a $24 million Pentagon contract awarded to the robotics firm Foundation Future Industries, where he serves as chief strategy advisor. The contract will fund testing of its Phantom humanoid robots for future military applications. Here's Eric Trump speaking on Fox Business about the deal.
You know, I got involved with crypto in a very big way because we had to win that digital revolution. We have to win robotics in the United States of America.
Democratic lawmakers have blasted the deal as a clear example of nepotism and corruption. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren wrote, quote, "Is the Pentagon just a cash machine for Trump's kids now? This looks like corruption in plain sight," Warren said. The data mining firm Palantir is calling on the United States to reinstate the military draft, saying free and democratic societies need hard power to prevail. Palantir's call came as part of a 22-point manifesto celebrating the virtues of U.S. power and warning Silicon Valley has lost its sense of direction. It also argues some cultures are inferior to others and blames Europe for demilitarizing after World War II, arguing, quote, the post-war neutering of Germany and Japan must be undone, unquote. The manifesto was based on the writings of Palantir's chief executive, Alex Karp. It prompted more than 200,000 people in the United Kingdom to petition the government to break contracts with Palantir, with some members of parliament comparing it to the ramblings of a supervillain, unquote. Palantir is a major U.S. government contractor, holds a contract with the U.S. Army worth up to $10 billion over the next decade. In more tech news, Meta, the parent company of Facebook, WhatsApp, and Instagram, says it'll lay off 10% of its workforce. CEO Mark Zuckerberg has said he expects many of Meta's white-collar jobs to be replaced by AI-powered systems. Shareholders of Warner Brothers Discovery have approved a $111 billion merger with David Ellison's Paramount Skydance. If the deal is approved by federal regulators, it'll create a media conglomerate unrivaled in U.S. history, spanning news, sports, movies, video games, theme parks, and more, all controlled by Paramount chairman David Ellison, a vocal supporter of President Trump. On Thursday, members of Congress joined protesters on the National Mall, close to where David Ellison hosted a lavish invitation-only dinner to honor President Trump at the U.S. Institute of Peace ahead of the White House Correspondents' Dinner this weekend. This is Craig Aaron, president of Free Press and Free Press Action.
And this incredible concentration of media power, the idea that one company could own two of the five biggest movie studios, that it could own CNN and CBS and HBO and a big piece of TikTok, all under one corporate umbrella, is just too much media power in too few hands.
At The Hague, judges at the International Criminal Court Thursday confirmed murder charges against former Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte as crimes against humanity, formally paving the way for him to stand trial. Judges ruled prosecutors have presented substantial evidence that Duterte created, funded, and armed death squads that killed as many as 30,000 people in so-called anti-drug operations. And the White House Thursday formally reclassified cannabis as a Schedule 3 substance, paving the way for the Food and Drug Administration to study its medicinal uses. For over half a century, the drug was listed under the U.S. Controlled Substances Act as a Schedule 1 substance, a list that includes heroin, ecstasy, and peyote. The reclassification, however, does not legalize marijuana for medical or recreational use under federal law. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in Seattle, Washington. We begin today's show in Lebanon. On Thursday, President Trump announced the Israel-Lebanon ceasefire will be extended by 3 weeks. Despite the announcement, Israel is continuing to carry out deadly strikes in southern Lebanon. On Wednesday, Israeli forces killed 5 people, including the prominent Lebanese journalist Amal Khalil, a correspondent for the daily newspaper Al-Akhbar. Khalil and her colleague, photographer Zineb Faraj, were reporting from southern Lebanon when an Israeli drone struck a car near them, killing 2 civilians. Amal and Zineb then sought shelter in a nearby building, but Israel then struck that building as well in what's been described as a double-tap strike. Rescue and medical workers rescued Zineb Faraj, but came under fire before they could rescue Amal. They were prevented from returning to the site for hours. Amal Khalil died by the time her body was recovered over 6 hours later. She's at least the 9th journalist killed in Lebanon this year. The Lebanese president, Joseph Aoun, accused Israel of the, quote, deliberate and consistent targeting of journalists in an effort to, quote, conceal the truth of its aggressive acts against Lebanon, unquote. The Lebanese Prime Minister, Nawaf Salam, called the killing a blatant war crime and a crime against humanity, unquote. On Thursday, thousands gathered for the funeral of Amal Khalil. At the funeral, the Lebanese reporter Ibrahim Dawi recounted learning about the death of his colleague.
At exactly 11 p.m., one of my friends in the army called me. He told me, Ibrahim, step aside for a bit. My heart skipped a beat. He told me there's bad news. He said, Emil is gone. I said, you must have found her. Emil is strong. Emil is a hero. Emil knows how to hide. She has 20 years of experience in wars. She knows where to go. I said, are you sure Emil was killed? He said, yes, Emil was killed.
Amal Khalil's brother, Ali, also spoke out at her funeral on Thursday.
Amal, after all, she's not just my sister and not just a member of our family. Amal is a journalist, a media professional. There's a ministry responsible for her, a ministry that demands her rights. It's not me personally who demands them. As my sister, I'll take her to her grave and fulfill my duties towards her. But her professional rights are with her ministry and with institutions. There's no charter, no law in the world, none of them, that allows targeting a journalist.
Amal Khalil was 43 years old. She'd worked as a reporter for 20 years. Al Jazeera reports Amal had previously received direct threats from an Israeli phone number on WhatsApp, warning her to stop reporting. In 2024, Amal Khalil told local media she'd received an Israeli death threat warning her to leave southern Lebanon or risk decapitation.
I received direct targeting on my phone from the Israeli Mossad. They threatened to kill me. They literally said, we will separate your head from your shoulders if you don't leave from the south. They advised me to leave the south.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman in Seattle, Washington, with Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, we're joined now by two guests. Steve Sweeney is the Lebanon bureau chief for RT, the Russian news channel. He was injured in an Israeli strike last month. He's in Beirut. In Paris, we're joined by Sara Kuda, the Middle East and North Africa regional director of the Committee to Protect Journalists. Sara, let's begin with you. You have a new article headlined, "We had Amal Khalil by her hand's grip, then Israel murdered her." Can you lay out what you understand happened on Wednesday?
Yes, of course. Thank you, Amy, for having me. So the circumstances surrounding Amal Khalil's death, really, it raises multiple overlapping concerns. Amal was on an assignment with her colleague Zainab. They were heading to the south, to Bint Jbeil, and on their way, there was a strike close by to them, so they ran away and sheltered in a building. And then this is where the building where they were sheltering was striked, as you mentioned, and it was known that those two journalists were sheltered and trapped inside this building. Amal herself managed to call her family and to call the Lebanese army to inform them about their situation. And yet, the Red Cross was not able to get to them in time and rescue Amal. At the beginning, the Red Cross was able to go there. They were able to rescue two civilians and Zainab, but then under fire, they had to leave because also Amal was deep under the rubble, so they have to leave. And when they tried to come back, they were blocked. Eventually, when they were able to go there, she was killed, she was dead, and it was too late. If this obstruction did not happen, we might have Amal alive between us today. But because of the obstruction, she is killed today. And this is what makes this constitute of a war crime and requires an international investigation. Otherwise, the killing of Amal would be the same as the over 260 journalists who has been killed by Israel over the three past years with full impunity.
And Sara, of course, the Israelis continue to deny that they target journalists. But what do you make of the fact that that Amal herself had claimed that she'd gotten threats from an Israeli number in the past and that she was told to stop reporting.
Israel has a pattern in denying these claims and in also smearing journalists saying that they are terrorists and they attacked them and killed them because they are terrorists and a threat on Israel. So this is not new. And for Amal being threat, several journalists, including the journalist union in Lebanon, they were aware of these threats and they saw the messages. So they are not claims. They are true, they are correct. And Israel has this pattern since 2023, threatening journalists. We have seen this with Anas al-Sharif in Gaza, with Hamza al-Dahdouh in Gaza, and with other journalists around the region.
I also like to bring in Steve Sweeney to the conversation, a British correspondent for Russia Today. You were at Amal's funeral. You knew her. Could you talk about her?
Well, yes. I mean, the brutal killing of Amal Khalil is not only a tragedy, but as the previous speaker said, it's a war crime. Now, Amal had been working in the field for 20 years since the 2006 war. She was very well known. She was very well loved by everybody. We call her the Queen of the South, and she belonged to the people. She was, what she did was incredibly unique. This this work that she was doing, raising the voices of the people, particularly in the south of Lebanon. She would go from village to village speaking to them, and they were telling their stories about the brutality that had been meted out to them for decades by the Israelis. So she was a very, very powerful voice. She was an experienced journalist as well, and we were all, when we heard the news that she had been caught up in the Israeli airstrikes and that she was trapped under the rubble, we were all waiting with bated breath, really, to see what happened. And you know, as we've heard, the Israelis blocked those rescue efforts. They attacked the emergency services, the civil defense workers, the Lebanese army, to stop them from retrieving the body. And Amal herself had received some very serious death threats from the Israelis over the years, threatening to behead her, warning her to keep out of the south. Now, it's a testament to her steadfastness, not just of Amal, actually, but of all of those journalists working in the south of Lebanon, that they're refusing to leave the field. Now, this is what Israel is trying to do. It's trying to prevent the truth from being reached by a much, much wider audience, to see the war crimes that are being carried out there on a daily basis. Now, our crew, the RT crew, myself and my colleague, Ali Reed Espeti, we were also targeted in an airstrike reporting from the Khazmiya Bridge. Now, Israel consistently says that it doesn't target journalists. It's repeated this again since they killed Amal. But you have to remember, Israel has the most advanced military technology in the world, but it also has the most advanced surveillance technology in the world. It uses artificial intelligence, for example. It knows every single car number plate, every single vehicle. It reads our messages. It listens to our conversations. This is why we talk about these strikes being deliberately targeted. Now, in our case, they claim that it wasn't, but there's absolutely no doubt in our mind that this was an attempt to kill us. You can see from the footage where the missile strikes the bridge. The bridge was already destroyed. It was no longer, there was no military objective in targeting the bridge. We had also consulted with the Lebanese army, who have a barracks or a base at the end of the bridge, and they said, yes, it's perfectly safe. It's fine for you to go and film. Now, had that bridge been under threat at any stage during our time on the bridge, then the Israelis would have got a message to the Lebanese army via UNIFIL. This is generally what happens in those situations, asking them to pull away and withdraw from the bridge, and then they'll get back in touch to let them know that it's safe. So the attack on us, the killing of Amal, and then just a few weeks ago, we had the killing of Ali Shweib, Fatima Fatouni, and Mohammed Fatouni in a targeted strike. Israel again admitted to carrying out that strike. They said that they were targeting Ali Shweib. They said that he was member of Hezbollah's elite Radwan force. Now, again, this is inconceivable. The photograph that they published, as Fox News discovered when they asked the IDF, they admitted that it was photoshopped, and they didn't have any other evidence. But this is part of a pattern that we've seen with the smearing of journalists. They've tried it again with Amal. They've said that she was in the field, she was giving out Hezbollah positions, she'd come from Hezbollah military positions, this kind of thing. Exactly the same narrative that we saw being played out in Gaza, where they've killed hundreds of journalists. Now, Israel, for all that it says, it's killed more journalists in the past, since October 2023, than were killed in the First World War, Second World War, Vietnam War, Afghan War, and Iraq wars combined. So it's